They tuck it away in one foot inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Brawl of the Lions UK podcast, episode number 82, Next Man Up. What do you mean there's no one left? My name's Matthew Turner, alongside my co-host Anthony Fitzpatrick. How you doing, man?
Oh, seen better days. Been very busy, this week, but had a little bit of time off today, ready to do the show. It's good to talk some Lions football, even if it's a little difficult to at this moment in time.
A problem shared is a problem halved. This is a therapy session for Lions fans everywhere. Just at the top of the show, I'd like to mention our Discord channel. Come and get involved. It's really electric come game day, and it's only 3 days away. So give us a shout, and we will give you a link to join us in there. You can talk to all of the Royal Alliance contributors in there. Don't forget our college football podcast. There's been a little delay on week 5 review, but I think that's going to be recorded tomorrow. So that's going to be really cool. And John Kapler in the chat is absolutely right. Across the pond this week, there is an NFL game, and I am going to it. So that's going to be really cool. It's, I think, Jets-Dolphins? I can't quite remember. No, Jets-Falcons. Sorry. Beg your pardon. Jets-Falcons. That's the game I'm going to. So that's going to be really, really cool. Don't forget to like and sub the video, our channel, across wherever you can. Any support you can give us, much appreciated. We're going to be diving into the Lions news in the last couple of days, and going into the Vikings preview, who were playing on Sunday. Cheers to Spencer for the like, much appreciated by man. Just before we get started, and you weren't on the review podcast for the Bears game on Monday, just some quick takeaways from you on that game.
Oh, it was an absolute sickener for me. I think we'd all gone into that with a bit of a sense of expectation. You know, the Bears were maybe there to be had, but unfortunately it was just unlucky that Andy Dalton wasn't fit for the day and Justin Fields comes in. And yeah, I was just so frustrated during the game. There were just little problems that have bugged us all this season. Little things that haven't gone our way. I mean, just little things like the big killer for us in that was the silent cadence fumble when Goff walks up and it just drops into the arms of one of their D-linemen. I mean, their first drive was devastating, but our first one had been just as good. And if we'd have ran that in, I think I can see the course of that game going so much differently. But that happens, the fumble happens, the forced fumble happens, and we just couldn't get going. And once again, we left ourselves too big a hole to deal with. We had to get away from the running game, and when we do that, and when we put it on Goff's arm, you know, that's not the way that we need to be playing. We need to keep it half and half. We need to keep the run game involved. And just to see us go down 2 scores again and have to try and worm our way back was really, really frustrating. And I've been back and had a look at the tape during the week because I was really perplexed as to how their offensive line dealt with us so well, because it's not really a great line. But I've looked and, you know, they were putting 6 and 7 guys in there every time, even on passing plays. There were 6 or 7 guys in that line. I was wondering why we weren't getting any pressure, because every bugger was getting double teamed, and they were doing this because our secondary couldn't cope with 1 receiver, 2 receivers going downfield. That's where the inexperience shows, and that's where all these little things that come together, which just, you know, because the secondary can't contain like that, they can afford to have more men blocking, which blocks our defensive line, which is our strength. We lost Romeo Okwara, which took away the edge pressure, which isolated our inside defensive linemen, which means, again, you know, our strength was nullified. And then on the offensive line, we lose Frank Ragnow. We've lost one of the top 2 centers in the league. We've lost our top 5 left tackle. This is where our strength is meant to be. And we're getting crippled by injuries, which is just not allowing us to operate how we want. So there was a little bit of frustration with the team, but there's a little bit of, I mean, come on, man, let the injury bug just lay off us a little while. There were positives, and I did look through them, but just frustration overall for me.
I mean, I guess the only silver lining is that if we thought we might be contending, if we thought we could win our division and this injury bug hit us, it would be almost... I mean, I know it's crushing because now our floor has dropped so low, but, you know, at least it's taken us from, well, we're a bad team to we're a really bad team, rather than we're a really good team to, oh, shit. But anyway,
I think, you know, we are an all right team. It's just when you're missing your top left tackle, your top center, your number one wide receiver, all your senior cornerbacks, you know, your senior linebackers left because he just couldn't be asked. You just can't operate without these pieces. You know, there is a way here in which we can win games, but it relies on that inside defensive line and the offensive line winning the line of scrimmage. And we're just losing pieces in there that we can't afford to. And the lack of depth onwards is showing from that. And the worst part about it is now, well, we're going to talk about it in a minute, so I'll come to it in a minute. But yeah, we're just losing pieces we can't.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Right, let's move on a little bit from Dan in the chat. Love Dan very much. And we need to get you on the show. I said it before, but we need to make this happen. Dan says, thanks for this group therapy session. My name is Dan, and I'm a Detroit Lions fan. It was a hard week and a hard opponent. Love the Lions. Let's get back up again. Cheers, guys. Couldn't agree more. I do hear Dan Campbell's opening press conference about getting knocked down and getting back up again. And the team has to exemplify that now because we are knocked down. And there's something amazing, actually, that I want to just highlight right now because it's crazy to me. If Hockenson does not play in this game, and he did not practice yesterday, we don't know how badly banged up he is. And if Penei Sewell doesn't play on Sunday, which it has been said by a few people is unlikely right now, the only two guys above a cap number of $3.05 million starting for this team on Sunday are Jared Goff and Halepulavaati-Vaitai. $3.05 million in the cap. When the cap is for the Lions this year, $193 million. That's staggering. Like, it's ridiculous. Let's have a look. Dan's made another long comment, so I'm just going to read it out and hope that there's no really bad things said in there. I have my Kool-Aid-induced theory about Jared's weakness might be a strength this week. If he is best up to 5 yards from the line of scrimmage, and then that's a quick throw, and maybe with our line beat up, he will need to get the ball out quick. Hopefully Lynn plays a hot hand if one running back is doing better. That's absolutely fair. And there's actually a comment earlier on from Analytics Den from Luke G's Discord, and he says, hope the line goes well. I have one question. Do you think this could be an Amon-Ra St. Brown breakout game? He could get 100 yards. I mean, he's a slot receiver. Our O-line is beat up. Matched with Dan's point about needing to get the ball out quickly in the passing game, Amon-Ra needs to be a factor if we're going to do anything in this game. But will it happen? I mean, that's a big question. If you have a look at Minnesota's defense, the linebackers are Eric Kendricks, who's had a good season so far, 1 sack, 47 tackles, 3 tackles for a loss. PFF grade's middling, but hey. And Anthony Barr might be back on Sunday for the first time since week 2, 2020, the elite linebacker for the Vikings, who obviously had his injury problems recently. That's going to make it very tough for someone like Amon-Ra to be a factor in this game. So, you know, that's how I see that going. We'll delve into the game a little bit more later. But any thoughts on Amon-Ra? I mean, it looked like he was potentially the one at fault in the fourth and one play, never mind what Goff was doing. But I heard a bit of chat recently about how in that fourth and one play late on in the Chicago game, Goff is throwing to a predetermined spot and he hits that spot. And actually, Amon-Ra is the one who doesn't come out of the break quickly enough and almost looks a bit lazy in the route running. And looking back on it, I can kind of agree with that. Maybe that wasn't on Goff at all. And the play call is still bad. Like, run the ball. But given what happened, I don't know. Does Amon-Ra need to try harder?
The thing is, with that, it's very easy to put on a still of a certain situation. Well, I've seen this still where everyone has, oh, you know, is it Cephas who's wide open on that fourth and one play? Is it Cephas?
It's Cephas.
And it's easy to have a still like that and go, oh my God, why is he not throwing to him? But you're not seeing the whole picture. You're not seeing the whole play. When Goff looks out to Amon-Ra and is going to throw to him, Cephas hasn't even broken off his route at that point. You know, he's identified where he's going. Amon-Ra's getting to the outside and he throws out there. It's easy to go, why is he not looking at Cephas? But that's what all, well, that's what most quarterbacks will do. They'll find their target and they'll go for them. And even if he didn't, you're going to have to thread that ball. There's two defenders like stood up with guys there who could intercept if he's going to throw through to Cephas. Because don't forget, he's right behind that lead. You can't just lob it over. He's got to throw it quite narrow. And it's a tough throw in itself. And that's what I mean. These stills can make you look like you've got a point, but until you've seen the whole play, you can't. I think Amon-Ra maybe could have done a little bit more on there, but I think there's just a little bit of fault everywhere. I think that was just a highlight of our game. There were just lots of little mistakes on a lot of people, but I don't agree with people just putting that up and going, oh my God, Goff's horrible because he didn't make that throw. Just watch the entire play first. But, you know, I think Amon-Ra's getting there. This was his best game by a long shot. I think it was, what, 83 yards? Or 70. I know him and Cephas. One of them got 83. One of them got 70. That was a massive positive to take away from this game. Those two, Cephas especially, has proven that he's going to be a part of this receiver room when the rebuild is done and we're playing well. And we said this season, if any of these 1 years or rookies can land in that receiver room, that's a bonus. It's one less position for us to fill. And Cephas looks right at home. I mean, I'm honestly impressed with how quick he's come along. But Amon-Ra got his shots at last. He's had to wait, but you have to build that bond of trust with your quarterback. And Goff now looks like he's beginning to trust him a bit more. And I mean, it's only week four. So it's not like it's been a long time for him to gain that trust with him. So if those two carry on the way they are, then, you know, we've got our slot receiver of the future and we've got a depth receiver of the future already. I don't know how high Cephas' ceiling is, but it's pretty good.
I mean, can you imagine if we have five wide receivers going forward in future years, and number three is Amon-Ra, number four is Khalif Raymond, number five is Quintez Cephas, and then one comes from a high pick in a draft somewhere, and two comes from a high-priced free agent signing. Like,
exactly.
That sounds amazing.
Exactly. You could have three-fifths of your receiving core already here. And that was the thing we said about the receiver core this year. I don't think there's a wide receiver one or necessarily two there, but there are depth guys. There's our slot guy there. You know, those are still big parts of a team going forward. So it was great to see that. I mean, I don't think this weekend is necessarily going to be the best for Amon-Ra personally, just because, you know, that defense has got a lot in the secondary. And, you know, I just look at that defensive line. I look at Michael Pierce and I think, Christ, he's one of the best nose tackles going. And we've got Evan Brown in there, who's a straight-up rookie. I think that line's going to get annihilated. And I disagree with the fact that Goff throwing quicker will be better because everyone's saying he's going to his first read, etc. The amount of times, especially that Matt Nelson got burned by the rusher on the edge, forcing Goff to throw quicker and make bad choices, I think that's a bad thing. I don't think Goff needs to be rushed and be making quick decisions. I think he needs a little bit more time in the pocket to make the right decision. So I would slightly disagree there. And, you know, it's just a pain in the arse, but the Vikings have come at the worst time. I cannot stand losing to that fraud twice every season. Kirk Cousins is a fraud and we make him look like an absolute world beater and I'm sick to death of it.
To be fair, he's made a mockery of quite a few really good teams so far this year, and we'll get back into that in a minute. But we'll start off with the news over the last few days. Romeo Okwara has moved officially to IR. He's done for the season with his Achilles. That's crap. I bought his jersey in this offseason because I was a believer, and he proved me right in these first four games. I'm just absolutely gutted for him. I'm hoping that him and his brother both are, you know, really contributing hard come this time next year. So fingers crossed for that. In a corresponding move, Lions have signed Jesse Lemoinier from the practice squad to the active roster. He came via the Chargers from last season. The Lions have also signed center Ryan McCollum from the Texans practice squad, presumably asked to serve as backup for Evan Brown in relief of Frank Ragnow. If you believe Jeff Risden of Lions Wire and the Detroit Lions podcast, McCollum is by far better than the backup centers that we've had on this team before. I think in the back of his mind, he thinks that McCollum might be better than Evan Brown. We shall see in the next few weeks. Let's talk about the Lions situation in terms of the rebuild and what is going on. It's split into two parts. One, I think Ant's going to take, which is how the fan base is being potentially divided by popular media streams, not the national media, who have absolutely no idea and can't divide the fan base because they haven't got a clue, but perhaps people close to home. And then I'll talk about the cap and the impact that's happening. So,
do you want to go on the cap first?
Okay, I got the cap first. So, a few people have talked about this before, and some people have got the figures right, some people got the figures wrong. I just want to put things straight. It's absolutely horrifying. I mentioned before there's only two guys above $3.05 million in cap who could be playing on Sunday, which is bad enough. But the total cap this year for all the Lions per over the cap was $193.3 million. The dead money so far for this year, and it was exacerbated by Jamie Collins being cut, so it's gone up significantly even recently. But to date stands at $57.4 million. The number of people we have on IR, this is all per over the cap. If you add in Romeo and you add in Ragnow, who have not yet been added to these figures, that stands at $32.4 million. The total, therefore, not playing, the Lions are paying out for this season, or in cap numbers are paying out for this season, is $89.8 million. The total cap, $193.3. That means the total amount that we have for the team that is playing this Sunday is $103.6 million. That is 55% of our available cap. Some teams out there who are a bit luckier with their injury situation and have a good roster to begin with, so haven't cut so many people, are at about 90 to 95%. So we are $70, $75 million behind these guys. I mean, if this continues, if you know, if some of our guys who are a little bit banged up end up not playing for a few weeks, we're at a massive competitive disadvantage just through that basis alone. If we win one game in the next month, this is a tremendous green flag in favor of this coaching staff, because it means that with a team that does not deserve to win anything on the basis of the quality of the players they have, because of the restrictions they have on the cap, and the players they hoped would start who are injured, and you can't account for that too easily, especially the number that we have, we actually get a win over the line. It's a miracle at this point. How anyone could predict a win for the Lions in the next month is beyond me. So I hope that no one does, because your expectations must be lower than that. And
That's unreal, isn't it? I mean, do you reckon any team's ever had sort of anywhere close to that before? I mean, I guess there are some with injuries and that, but nearly $100 million out, not playing. It just shows how bad Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia's tenure was here, doesn't it? It's absolutely disgusting that they could let so much money go.
It's ridiculous. I mean, just before all those injuries us hit as well, we were still playing with all of that dead cap, and we still ran three Super Bowl contenders close, and then should have beaten the Bears but choked. Like, we have five trips to the red zone, convert some of them, we win that game. So, you have a look at that. This coaching staff is working miracles. I mean, we're not winning, but we're still looking good. The reason that Sunday hurts so much is that we actually looked good and choked. We beat ourselves. If we looked awful, we could go, well, it was going to be a bad season anyway. But the coaching staff have actually raised our expectations because they're doing really well.
Yeah, and I think, but if you look at some sections of, you know, Twitter and that, you wouldn't think that. Campbell got a lot of heat after this weekend, didn't he? You know, in regards to, I don't know what the feedback was like on here on Monday, but his fourth and one calls, his aggressiveness in play calling, that came under a lot of scrutiny very quickly, didn't it? I mean, I know he's done it quite a bit this year, but I mean, 12 months ago, we were bemoaning the fact that Matt Patricia did nothing aggressive as in his entire career here. There would be fourth and ones at the 45 or the 40 of the opposition half, and he punked. He would not trust. And he had an elite quarterback here whilst he was doing that. And, you know, do you notice how that narrative shifted? Because at the time, people panned him for it. This, you know, passive-aggressive offense he had, he would often lose us games because he just didn't even try to win them. The narrative was 12 months ago that that was terrible and we needed to take some aggression into calls. And 12 months later, we have aggression in our calls and we have a head coach who's saying to his team, I trust you to go out in this situation and convert, which is a show of faith in his players and shows what type of head coach he is. And already he's getting absolutely panned for it. I mean, it's like, what do you want? So many people came into this, but the way it gets spun, I mean, I was talking with SW Lyon, who's on here often, and he was like, you know, he needs to do it. He needs to be more passive. You're just like, well, hang on a minute. He's a new coach. You know, he's four games here. He's working out like the rest of the players. He's developing like all the rookies, all the players here. He's developing as a head coach currently. And it's going to come eventually. It just needs a little time. And this is what I wanted. This is sort of feeding into the point, and especially one with a cap there about how I've noticed this week, the amount of negativity going around the Lions fan base, but specifically where it's aimed at. You know, I saw a tweet from one of the media organizations over there, DSN, who I hate most of the time because of how they are. And they actually had the gall to tweet, this is a coaching problem. It's nothing to do with talent. And you're like, are you for real? We've 100 million in talent out nearly, and you're expecting Dan Campbell to win games. You know, the fact that we're in a position to win games is, as you've already said, a testament to how these players are fighting. And I know we're not starting well, but we're not been getting rolled over like we were last year, like the Bucks or the Panthers, etc.
Yeah.
We've been doing really well, but and this is where my problem, and this is what I just say to Lions fans out there, just be careful. We're four games into a rebuild here. This has been a Mad Max wasteland left behind by Quinn Trisha. It seriously is. It's one of the worst situations you could ever expect to walk into. The roster is devoid of talent at a lot of positions. We've got a lot of big contracts we've had to bite the bullet on. A lot of money we can't use. We are four games in. And we had enough faith in this team to try and eke out wins in this situation. But the same old Lions crowd, that part of the media, are now coming out and they're already trying to sow discord out there. Campbell's getting attacked. Why the hell are you attacking Dan Campbell now? Me, as a fan, I see this and it goes to the back of my mind and I think, right, okay, this is something to watch, his aggressiveness on calls. But I'm going to see how he develops over time and I'm going to see, you know, how he develops as a coach. I'm not going to start writing articles out there saying how he's terrible, how these calls are costing the Lions games, how he's a bad coach. But this is the overreaction. They are looking to set people against one another now. They've done it with Campbell. I've seen all the articles coming out now. Should we have drafted Justin Fields? That's an attack on Brad Holmes because Brad Holmes is modus operandi is his ability to draft. And I think we'd all agree, P'nai Sewell, it was the correct draft pick, even, you know, personal preference. I watch a lot of college. He wasn't my first guy, but for the most part, he was, and he was a sensible pick. But you see how the media are now trying to turn people against one another. If you think that Holmes is a bad drafter, you're going to go, oh, God, we're going back to the same old Lions stuff here. And I've seen it this week. There are fans arguing one. There is the negative group has now emerged because the situation we're in is perfect for them. All our top players are injured. We're losing games. We're not gaining any credibility. It's the exact time to stick the boot into this new management structure now. But if you are level-headed and analyzed, you will see that it's different this time. We drafted well. We came out of this draft excited for a change, not thinking, good God, we've reached or any of this. You've seen how the players are adjusting to Dan Campbell. They're fighting hard for him. He understands what the issues are here, the situation is. We all back him. And I would just say that, you know, I'm sick and tired of seeing these divisive tactics used by the same people simply to garner, you know, a reputation. And I don't know whether you've seen it as well, but for me, I've seen it a lot this week. There's a lot of arguments out there. There's a lot of trying to twist people against one another. So close to the start of a rebuild, we can't make these judgments yet. I know it's been a long time since we've had success on a pitch, but we have to understand this is the start of a process and we're coming out of a deep, dark hole here.
So one thing I'll say is that The most galling thing to me isn't people like Detroit Sports Nation or whatever they're called, DSN. They've always been part of that crowd. If they want to spurt that, you know, that's what's happening with them, and they've never changed tact on that. So fine, like, they're a known quantity, and I'm not bothered about that. What I'm bothered about is the people who are never on that wagon up until this season, deciding suddenly that they're going to jump onto it. And that's Woodward Sports. Woodward Sports, who have a guy I really like in Corey Woods, who is a legitimately good journalist. And he's the face of that network. But, you know, and they collaborate with a load of guys that we actually like. I'm sure Woodward have done stuff with Rachel Marie and stuff like that. So, you know, they're not bad people necessarily, but the whole network, it seems, has jumped on the... We're starting to pay people properly, and we need to pay our bills, so we need clicks, and how do we do that? They don't believe what they're saying. They're saying it because they want your money. It doesn't matter whether it's the national media, because we've always had a go at them. It does matter when it's the local media, but when they're in it just as a cash grab, that is horrific to me. And it's... You are putting the needs of the team below that of your own, and I just want it to stop. And I think that people should get fired, because at the end of the day, people like Woodward Sports will get shoved. There are memes being created right now. There's one in our Discord at the moment showing that handshake gif of 97.1 and Woodward Sports together taking down the Lions in from the inside out. And it's like, you know what, they are doing that, and as fans, we have to reject it. We have to say, no, we are not going to absorb your content.
And I think that's, I think that was the point I was trying to make. I've been thinking about this all week and wondering how to try and put it, because it's disturbing to me. You know, this fan base is never going to get anywhere if it's divided. You know what they say about a house divided? You know, it's that we're at that point now already, 4 games into a new tenure. We've already got people trying to cause unrest there, because going into this season, everyone was firmly behind Dan Campbell. For the first time in what felt like a long time, there was a huge, you know, sweeping consensus. We'd made the right choices. And as we've shown, with the amount of money he can't work with at the minute, with the situations he's in, it's absolutely, it's one of the hardest jobs going. And I would just, you know, as Lions fans, I'm sure most of them will know this themselves. You just have to be able to see through the picture that certain people are trying to paint. Some are going to try and sow discord, same old Lions. It's just a new, it's just another regime, just like the last one. No, it's not. Look past that. Out of this draft, you know, I reckon every one of this draft, maybe, well, Jefferson, maybe not. He all might always be a rotation player, but every other one has the potential to be a starter within a year. And we've never had that before, ever. If he could well have been a starter by the end of this season, if he'd not got injured. Levi's dealing with a little bit of injury issue, but Aleem will be a starter. P and I will. You know, Barnes will. We've seen that we need him there. So if you see any of this, should we have drafted this guy? Should we have drafted the other? No, we have a GM who knows how to draft. You know that. You don't need someone from the outside to tell you otherwise that your GM can't draft.
At the end of the day, all you need to do is go through those picks one by one and actually critically assess them. So people were worried about were going to be a bust. And then after one game, should we trade Taylor Decker? Or make your mind up. He's played well for a rookie, and now he's got a little bit of an injury issue. Let's move him back to right tackle, get Taylor in at left. Let's make this O-line great. He's going to be a really good pick. Levi was always a little bit of a project, dealing with a slight injury issue, yet to be seen. Let's call that level, because they couldn't have known that in advance. Aleem McNeil played great. Move on. Awan Ra, could have seen a little bit more from him, but that's more down to the play calling rather than anything he's done, because he's put maximum effort in on the training ground. He was given the chance to succeed in the previous game, had one bad route potentially that I talked about earlier, but barring that, was our second best receiver on the day behind Quintez Cephas. Moving into bottom of the third, we had Ifi Melifonwu, had a bad camp, then came in and actually played really well before getting injured, so got to look up on that one. Derek Barnes, moved up for him, he's looked really good so far. so much so that we actually cut our high-priced linebacker. And then he talked about Jamar Jefferson. He could really do something down the stretch later on in his rookie contract. You don't know, but, you know, there we go. If you have a look at all of those picks, there's no one necessarily that you would say we look less fondly on than we did when we drafted them. Like, no one. It doesn't take you more than 5 minutes to just go through one by one and go, well, if it is a bad draft, we don't know it yet. If it is a good draft, well, it looks like it probably will be, but we don't know for sure yet. It's too early, but it looks good. So there you go. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise. If you want good Lions content, there's so much out there. Detroit Lions podcast, us, Luke G, you know, a load of analytics sent. A load of these guys have their own opinion on things. They're not going to be right about everything. We for sure are not going to be right about everything. We're in a different fucking country. We can't get all the information. But at the end of the day, as Luke G will say, please, please do your research. And if you can't do it yourself, listen to guys that you trust, not the guys who are asking for your clicks and your money.
Exactly. And I couldn't have put it any better way there. It's just, I just really want the One Pride to stick together with this, because I think we are on a winning ticket. I just think we're in a situation right now which is beneficial to those who would seek to divide rather than unite. And I'm sick of seeing it already after 4 weeks, the attempts to just belittle Campbell and Holmes and everyone around them. So, you know, I'll end this here, but just, you know, like Matt says, just do your research first and you'll see that these guys are doing well. And yes, the mistakes have been made and we're not averse to saying they haven't been. There are some calls there, but you've got to give them time to develop as well, because they're all new. Pretty much every one of them is new at their jobs. And what you can see with the hard evidence we have so far, we've made the right calls along the way.
I actually wanted to speak about Dan Campbell and the calls. I said on Monday's pod I didn't agree with the 4th and 5 call early on to go for it. I still agree with that, but the analysts say I'm wrong and Dan Campbell is right. Early on in the preseason, Dan Campbell was asked, if the analytics say you should go for it, are you going to go for it? And he said, it depends on the situation. Maybe sometimes yes, maybe sometimes no. And everyone freaked out going, why isn't he following the maths? Like, if it says go for it, you should probably go for it. We want a modern head coach who's going to go for things. He's going for it, and he should go for it. He's also not the one calling the plays. So if you want to criticize someone, it's a limb. Because the call was made to go for it, which was correct, and the play call was made, which was potentially not the best. So, you know, you're having a go at the wrong guy if you're angry at things, because going for it demonstrably was the right thing to do. Talking about going for it versus not going for it in terms of punt versus touchdown, I just want to mention @surrender_index on Twitter. It's probably one of my favorite Twitter accounts. If you want to know how cowardly a team is, it tweets on every single punt in every single game. For example, the Tampa Bay-New England game, 7:17 left in the third, with New England winning 7-6, 4th and 27, with a surrender index of 0.2. That was the least cowardly punt in the 2021 season and the least cowardly punt since 1999. In difference to that, Chargers game versus Vegas. Chargers decided to punt against Vegas from the Vegas 37 on 4th and 10 with 2 minutes to go while winning by 14 points. That was the 91st% most cowardly punt of the season so far and the 87th% most cowardly punt since 1999. Basically speaking, even with 14 points up from the 36, they should have strongly considered going for that with 2 minutes remaining, because it would have killed the game, if nothing else. So if you want to get a handle on exactly how decisions are made, especially when punts are made, because this is when they tweet, I definitely recommend you go and have a look at that Twitter account. Right, let's talk.
I would just quickly end that by saying, you know, if Dan Campbell was to try all these fourth downs, you know, conversions in 1 year, this is the year to do it. This is the year where the expectations aren't as high, where we're going to struggle to win games. Let's just be all out aggressive and see what we can do, because that reveals a lot about your team for me. Shows the players that are willing to stand up and can convert on those downs. It shows your team's mentality. Why not go for it? And people will go, oh, what if we got the extra 6 points from field goals? We'd be closer in those games. The game is not going to follow the same flow after. If you sink one of them field goals and there's a kickoff from the other side, the game's going to transpire completely differently to how it is in this situation. You can't know if those field goals were ever going to impress it. But for me, the first one, 14-0 down, we ain't staying in that game with field goals. You know, we need to score. We need a touchdown. And we may as well go the hell for it. So I was all for it. The execution may have been incorrect, but the decision itself, I think, was the right one. But again, this is all part of the learning process of Dan Campbell, and I'd rather he do it this year so that he perfects his technique when it matters, yeah, when we're contending. I think that's all I'll end that on with.
Yeah. So let's move on to Lions at Vikings at US Bank Stadium this Sunday. In the betting, the Lions are 10-3, the Vikings 9-2 on. In American terms, that makes the Lions +433, and the Vikings, I would guess, something in the region of -410, something like that.
Oh, the Lions, wish they'd use our betting metrics.
I wish they did too, but hey. The Lions are 9.5-point underdogs on the spread, which I think, given everything we've just talked about, is particularly generous. The over-under 49.5, one of the highest ever. The highest it's been this season, and one of the highest in the NFL this season. So Vegas anticipating this to be a very high-scoring game. I wonder who they think is going to score the points. In the injury report, which I have not loaded because I am a douche, in the injury report, first thing I should mention, Cameron Dantzler is not on the injury report because he is on the COVID list. He was put on there 2-3 days ago. He is eligible to return by the time the game kicks off, but he's not on the injury report because of that. Thank you to Mike Hodges, who's just subscribed on YouTube. Appreciate you, man. Thanks very much for that. It's not been revealed so far what's happened on Thursday yet. In the injury report, did not practices for the Vikings include Emir Smith, Marcet, the wide receiver, Michael Pierce, the DT, Nick Vigil, the linebacker, and Dalvin Cook, the running back. There were then lots of full practices, but I will not bore you with all of them because they're in full practice. Apart from Anthony Barr in full practice, does worry me slightly. Detroit Lions, two did not practices. Hawkinson and Sewell with a knee and ankle, and then limited Brockers, Flowers, Swift, and Williams. For me, no concerns about Brockers, Swift, and Williams. Flowers is the first time he's trained in a week and a half, so that's actually encouraging to me. And now only one issue listed, not the shoulder, just the knee. So he's resolved one of his problems, but Sewell and Hawkinson obviously really worrying. Going into the Lions, they're 1-3. But Pro Football Reference has their expected wins at 2.1 to 1.9. So not only have they been unlucky with one loss, but they should have actually been slightly ahead of that. So they've been very unlucky. They lost in overtime in week one against Cincinnati 27-24. They then lost to Arizona 34-33, so some really close games. They then beat Seattle, which is no mean feat, 30-17. I know that Seattle were bad travelling east, but, you know, dog home, so maybe that's not so unexpected. At that point, they were the number one ranked offense in the league, 1-2, and then they lost to Cleveland 7-14. In terms of their offense, they're 17th in points scored with 94. They have 1,081 passing yards. That's 10th. 9 passing touchdowns is 5th, and only 1 interception. However, despite all of that, they're only 6.6 net yards per attempt. That's 17th. And Cousins has taken 7 sacks so far this season. He's completed 69% of his passes for a passer rating of 105.6, which is one of the highest of his career. In terms of rushing, 449 yards is 13th, 1 touchdown is 30th, but yards per attempt is 4.2, which is 15th. They've had 2 turnovers this season on offense, which is 2nd. In the league. So if you think you're going to turn Cousins over, well, he's not shown it so far, but we know he's prone to a blow up in his past years in his career. Third down conversions, they're not the best. 22 on 56 is 39.3% and 19th, but they're solid on fourth down. 66.7% is 8 on 12 attempts for 11th. In terms of their threats, running back Dalvin Cook pops out obviously, although he did not practice yesterday. 4.4 yards per attempt, 226 yards, and 1 touchdown. Also in the passing game, 10 on 16 for 70 yards, is 7 yards of catch. They've also got a wide receiving core that boasts Justin Jefferson, who should have been Rookie of the Year last year. I don't know if he was, but should have been. 3 touchdowns so far this season, and Adam Thielen, 4 touchdowns on the season. This offense is humming this season. I mean, you know, they've played Arizona, who look like they're potentially the team in the NFC so far this season, and they lost by a point, scoring 33 points. And then they absolutely destroyed Seattle. Now they face Cleveland, potentially a Super Bowl contender, and lost by 7. But, man, like, this is going to be tough.
Oh, God, yeah. to the point where I don't see any feasible scenario where we win. I think
spoilers.
The trouble is, as I've said already in this, our game this year was predicated on the fact that we win the trenches. You know, we invested heavily in the offensive line, these 3 first-round picks in that offensive line. We invested in the defensive line. You know, we bought in Michael Brockers for a hefty sum, you know, and, you know, quite rightly. And we've got 2 new defensive tackles in. You know, we've invested heavily in both. And because of injuries, because of the way we play, we've been limited as to how effective we can be in these games. Now, just to start, our offensive line, I mean, what the hell is it going to be come Sunday? Assuming Sewell's not playing, so you've got Evan Brown at center, you've got Vitae and Jackson at guard, and then you've got, well, I don't know, are you going to have to pull Vitae out now? One would assume you're going to have to pull Vitae out to right, maybe play Nelson left. Is Stenberg going to go in guard? I don't know. But the fact is, Matt Nelson was getting rinsed at right tackle every near God knows how many plays against the Bears, and now you're going to move him to the even more, you know, skilled tackle position. You're going to put him there against a Minnesota pass rush, which has got a lot of, you know, drive to it, a lot of bite. It's not going to be able to help us in the run game. You know, we're going to struggle to give Goff time to pass. And, you know, the one place you hit this Minnesota team is with the run game. Their run defense is terrible. And I know, you know, Ash said earlier to us, oh, yeah, but look at the teams they've played. But look at the teams they've played. They've played the Bengals and Mixon. The Bengals don't have a great offensive line, and Mixon's the only running back there. The Seahawks don't have a great offensive line, and Carson's the only running back there. You know, and they were able to hurt them for a lot of yardage. And we've got 2 top caliber running backs here with Swift and Williams. If we had a healthy offensive line with these two, we could cause so much damage to them with our running game. That would be the one area where I would be really confident of making a dent in. But it's going to get to the point where the backups and the rotational guys are going to have to play out of their minds on Sunday to, you know, to get the run game going. So say there's Michael Pierce in there, who's a very good nose tackle. You know, you've got the edge rushers in there. I mean, Griffin's back there, isn't he? Mm-hmm. Griffin's back. He's having a good season. You've got a lot to deal with. So it's all going to, you know, how is this ragtag offensive line going to do? And then on the other side of the ball, because we've lost Romeo Okwara and Flowers isn't, you know, is still in question as to what's going to happen. We've lost 2 of our biggest edge rushing threats there. And the whole point of, you know, having such a great defensive line, you've got the guys bringing pressure on the edge, you've got the defensive line going to work. But when your edge is affected, the inside defensive line gets isolated. I saw this against Chicago. You know, McNeil doubled up every play, sometimes tripled, and there were spare men in there. It was, I fear that might happen again, where we get to a point where they're just going to put in an extra tight end, they're going to put in a running back, a fullback, whatever, and they're just going to nullify our threat there because we've just got no one around the edge. You know, guys like Charles Harris, Julian Okwara, they're going to have to stand up and again play incredibly well, but it's a question of can they? If they can, if this offensive line can get its groove going and can somehow withstand this onslaught, and our edge rushers can find success to give the guys on the inside, you know, fairer battles to do their work. Because, I mean, Brock has played really well against the Bears. I really enjoyed it. He broke through that line several times on his own. You can see just how much damage that line can do. McNeil got into the backfield. He took a running back down for about 4 yards. He's finally come into the show. I've been looking at him closely. He gets double teamed every time, sometimes triple teamed. It's a hard nose tackle, such a hard position, but he's learning it and he's starting to become more effective. He was the highest graded defender in the last game. This is only after four games, he's already, imposing his will there. So there's just a lot of if, buts, and maybes in this one, but that's where our strengths are, and we need people at depth now to stand up to give us the chance to win this one.
Yeah, looking at Minnesota's offense, there's a couple of weaknesses that I can see. First of which is their tight ends are shite. Tyler Conklin, Chris Herndon have both played pretty poorly so far this year. Second of which is that the two of their four lowest graded players are their center Garrett Bradbury and their left tackle Rashad Hill. The third of the five is their left guard Ezra Cleveland. So if we want to expose somewhere, it's the left-hand side of that Minnesota line. Now, ordinarily, that's where Romeo would be. In Romeo's absence, it depends whether Flowers is playing, but that could be Charles Harris in there at right end. It could be, or right outside linebacker. It could be Austin Bryant. It could be Julian Aquara. But whoever plays down there, they need constant pressure on their side, because where is the Vikings' strength? Oh, look, two of their top four graded players are right guard and right tackle in Oli Udo and Brian O'Neill. So clearly they're running off right tackle and they're doing it very effectively. So that's where this game is going to be won and lost. It's going to be a massive victory for the Lions if Trey Flowers can play this game, because if they're running off right tackle, you need a good run defending left outside linebacker, and that is Trey Flowers. So that will be a big win if he can play in this game, because that's going to give us a chance to compete at one of Minnesota's strengths, and then we need to expose their weakness on the left-hand side. So, is there any competing with this wide receiver core? I already mentioned Thielen. I already mentioned Jefferson. But you know who is graded higher than Thielen so far this year? It's their third wide receiver, KJ Osborne. Like, that's horrifying. Osborne came up with some great catches in the last game that I saw. So, they've got a three-headed monster, and that's before you count people like D.D. Westbrook being on there, Emir Smith-Marset, who's on the injury report and has only played four snaps this season, but he's a threat too. So they're absolutely loaded at receiver, and Kirk Cousins is a fraud, but he's still in the MVP conversation so far this season. Now he got shut down by Cleveland, and lots of teams are going to get shut down by Cleveland, because that is a stacked team on both sides of the ball. But if we want to have any chance of winning in this game, we've got to put Cousins under pressure, and it comes through that left-hand side of the offensive line.
Oh, definitely, because I've seen that they're thinking of playing Darisaw there this weekend, aren't they?
But
I know a lot of their fans are saying Darisaw should start, or let's start Darisaw against the Lions and we'll ease him in. But Christian Darisaw is a bad player. I know he's a first-round pick, but he is not the best tackle in the world out there. And if this was to be his first game and someone would be able to get the better of him, you're right. That left-hand side of the line is the one you absolutely target. Maybe stack the other side to protect against the run, but you go after the rookie and you put him in a real uncomfortable situation, because he is not the best tackle in the world. And I think they reached for him a little bit, to be fair. I was saying he should probably go in the late 20s, maybe something like that. But I agree that is where the success is there to be had. As far as the receivers go, I think we've just got to let the rookies, for start, we've got to stop playing zone coverage. I'm sick and tired of it. I mean, I see us play a lot of zone where we're just giving them the easy yards. We can't do that against the Vikings. That's how Kirk Cousins loves to play. Get the easy yards if you can. And that's how you get, how they march downfield on us. I know we've got a lot of undrafted free agents back there, but, they're playing, in stretches, they're playing well. I know Bobby Price got burned last weekend, but the weekend before, we forget he gave up one reception for 5 yards on 7 targets the week before last, when he got absolutely torn to shreds. AJ Parker has played well in bits. Jerry Jacobs has played well in areas. I think we just have to trust them to be able to do so. I know it's easier said than done, but I think we've just got to let them get close to the receivers and let them get physical, and let's just stop standing off. And I think the safety room's the bit that's killing us. I don't think the corners are the issue. I don't think the rookie corners are the issue. I think it's the indecision of the safeties and the coverage skills sometimes of them. I'm not blaming Tracy Walker for that one. I'm blaming the other one, who we won't name.
No.
But I think that doesn't help. You feel like if you had a good safety in there, a leader of some form, I'd be a lot more comfortable with it, because I think the rookies are capable of dealing with assignments bigger than themselves. I've seen enough to say that they should at least be given the responsibility to do so. But I would just let them get physical with their receivers, try and keep them close in coverage, and just try and cut off those passes for Kirk Cousins. Because if you can do that, if you make him hold on to the ball a bit longer and you are able to put pressure on the left-hand side of that line, that's how you get to Kirk Cousins. Of course, the only problem after that is making sure you tackle him properly, because even proper tackles get called with flags on him. So I'm not sure how they're going to navigate that one. I'm still sore about it because it was that bad a decision last year. But offensively, I don't know, I think that's it. Just keep close coverage on their receivers and hit that left-hand side of the line with everything you've got and make it buckle.
Be aggressive, because that's blitz where it's a lot.
Yeah. And again, I think that's, we should do a bit more of that this year, because again, no one's given us a chance in this one, especially with the injuries. So let's just go all out aggressive and let's just go down. As Dan Campbell says, you're going to knock us down, we're going to get back up, keep doing it. Just trust your young guys in your secondary to do the job. Just give them closer coverage and do that. Then defensively, I think it all depends on the edges. If the inside defensive line are given room to work, they will get to him. It's just a case of, are they going to literally send Thielen and Jefferson up the field and stack everyone else in the box? Because if they do that, then we're going to struggle to get to Kirk Cousins, and we're going to have to pray that the coverage is good. Because that's what happened to us last week. They just stacked the box. That Chicago offensive line is not great. And I wonder why it was as good as it was. And as I say, they just poured so many men in there, which meant that it wasn't as much of an issue. And yet we still got some success, despite them doing that.
We did get some success. I really need Charles Harris to decide that he's going to be good in run defense. Because you can't play a guy like him for all three downs if he isn't going to be good in run defense. Sorry, you're a very good pass rusher, and I really like you on third down. But if you can't help us get to third and long, you can't play first and second down. So people have been, you know, really excited about him, and rightly so, because that sack was absolutely beautiful. The spin move inside and exploding to the quarterback. Yes, like it. But earn the right to do it first. And
the trouble is, none of them are that great at it. Julian and Romeo struggle. I know Romeo's out now, but Julian struggles.
Yeah.
Which doesn't help.
No.
Trey is good, but not amazing. So it's a case of, you know, pick your poison, but at least Charles Harris is getting success out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's worthy of putting in there, and let's give him a go and see what he can do. But I think Julian's important. It's just these backup edges now need to start producing. We need to get some pressure on the quarterbacks, to say, just to ease the pressure on the inside defensive line, because that's where we can get the most success, but not when they're getting absolutely smothered every game. And then offensively, I know we've not talked much about the offense here, but obviously it all comes down to that offensive line. I know we say this every game, but the run is where they're there to be had. But I think our highest grade of run blocker against Chicago was Kabinda, who's our fullback. He graded at about 73, and he was only in for six plays. I think after that, you're looking, I think it was 56, 57, maybe one in the low 60s. We didn't grade well in run protection. And that's a concern, given that most of our starters are out. We absolutely have to impose the run on them in this. We can't go two scores down in this and abandon the run, because they're good in pass protection. They just are. Their defense is good at protecting from that. We've got to somehow get this run game going. If it means getting a little inventive, a little trickery, trying to get to the outside, you know, try and swing plays, try anything. But it's absolutely critical. If we're going to, you know, make this competitive and possibly get a win. We always like to try and find the route to victory here. The run game absolutely 100% has to be implemented, and we still have to be using it deep into the third, early into the fourth. That's where it has to be. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. If we get behind the eight ball and we're 14 points down, we still need to run the ball. It's where we're going to find the most success. Even if that comes in the form of draw plays, if it comes in the form of screens, so we're kind of keeping it off balance but still running the ball, it needs to happen. Completely agree.
Yeah, and I, you know, again, a little biased here, so I'd say this, but I'm 100% activating Jefferson for his first game this weekend. I'm getting as many weapons as I can in that backfield and putting as many plays. Yes, I know I'm a bit biased, but, you know, I've done my tape on him. I know how good he can be.
I'm just saying you're beating the drum.
I am beating the drum, but I activate him and I make sure I've got as many potential scenarios and plays as possible out that backfield to keep them flummoxed, to give our offensive line something to work with. Because if they don't know what we're going to do, that's our best chance of being able to surprise them. So I'd have all three running backs active and I'd be using them all. I'd be rotating them in, out. If I was Anthony Lynn, I'd be getting very creative with this one. Just like the second half against the Ravens or the first half against the Packers, he got very creative with how the offense was running. You know, he got some deep throws in there even as well. So that's going to be our best opportunity to keep them guessing so they can't implement their defensive plan on us. So yeah. That's where I'm going offensively. You've got to get creative and you've got to go with the run game. But, you know, use all your weapons. We've got enough weapons to use here to win games. We've seen it. But we just need to, you know, technique needs to be better. We need to execute better because we've not passed 20 points now since the San Francisco game. You know, we're struggling to score points. So that absolutely needs to get better. So let's go for it. Let's get funky.
Yeah, and as Debt Fan Man says, so they can't figure out what we're going to do if we don't know what we're going to do. Brilliant. Good troll. I love it.
It. We could pick plays out of a hat and just go, sweet, right, let's try this one.
Yeah, I love it. I want to see a few more jet sweeps, to be honest. I don't really care about keeping it too complicated. There were loads of jet sweeps being like kind of drawn up for Amon Ra, and we've totally gone away from that. So why don't we try it? Like, it can't
exactly, but that's what I mean. You've got that backfield. You've got Amon Ra. You've got Raymond. You've got three running backs who can all double up as receivers. You've got a lot of guys in that backfield who you can create a lot of misdirection with, who you can create a lot of confusion with. Well, we've seen how this offense can play. I know it was just for a half each and not for a full game, but the Packers and the Ravens couldn't deal with our offense. Big portions of the game we were playing against them in halves because we were able to come up with a system that worked.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to do that again, and we need to hope that both sides of the ball critically work together at once, because that's the one thing we haven't had this far season. They've not worked in sync. The defense have been good in stretches again, but they've not had the offensive backup to take, you know, to get a momentum change out of it, and vice versa. Sometimes when the offense is hot, the opposition's just scoring straight back on us and we're not being allowed to get a lead and impose our will on a game, put our game plan in, start running it more, running the clock down, putting pressure on them. We've not been in a situation to do that anywhere so far. But I think the one thing we can't take out of this, though, is the Vikings are under pressure. They are 1-3 and they were expected to go toe-to-toe with Green Bay this year for the division. They are 1-3. They're coming up against us, who are injury ravaged. All the expectation and the pressure is on them to win this game. If they lose this, there's a chance that Zimmer's job comes into question seriously. He could be fired. And I think, well, maybe fired's a stretch, but he's going to be on a seat that's hot enough that he's not going to be able to sit on it. So I think we have to take into account that if we're still hanging with them after two or three quarters and that crowd starts getting a little hostile, pressure's a funny thing, especially on players who are expected to win. I know the chances of this happening aren't the best in the world, but you have to look at all scenarios. And being in this game and forcing the pressure onto them and them making mistakes is one of our best ways to winning this.
Yeah, it's very true. And going against our offense, their defense, before I go into that, just want to ask you guys, if you haven't done already, to like and sub on YouTube and Twitch. Would really help us out. You can do that if you're listening live, or if you're listening on the audio pod, anything you can do with that would be greatly appreciated. Let's talk now about... Oh, actually, no, one thing I wanted to mention too is at the bottom of our website, which is drawthelinesuk.com, we've got referral links for NFL Shop and for Fanatics. Not mentioned it before, it's just been there quietly, but if you do want to help the pod out and you're going to make a purchase anyway, it doesn't give you anything extra off, unfortunately, beyond the normal offers that they run, but you will allow us to have a little kickback on that. So if you do want to help the pod out and you're going to make a purchase anyway, if you can use our link, would love you forever. Let's move on to their defense now. And 92 points against so far for this Vikings defense against some high-powered offenses like Arizona and Seattle and even the Bengals have got a really good offense this year. They are only 11th in points allowed, which is really good. 1,014 passing yards against middle of the pack, 18th. 6 passing touchdowns against 9th. 2 interceptions is 18th. And 7.2 net yards per attempt is 25th. So they're giving up quite a lot on attempts, but not necessarily converting that into actual yards. So perhaps they're good against Yak and limiting Yak. 542 rushing yards against his 25th, 4 rushing touchdowns against his 18th, 4.8 yards per attempt is 28th. So this rushing defense is struggling greatly. On third down, they're very good. 16 of 49 conversions is 32.7%. That's 7th in the NFL. We're a little bit more leaky on fourth down. 7 on 10 attempts is 70% conversions. That's 21st in the NFL. Looking at their... Oh, they're big, big names in that defense, and there's quite a few of them. It's headed up by Danielle Hunter. 5 sacks on the year, 23 tackles, 15 of those are solo, 5 tackles for a loss, 7 quarterback hits, and an 81.4 PFF rating so far this season. Safe to say, it's been a triumphant return for him. And it has been as well for Everson Griffin after coming from the Lions last season. 2 sacks, 6 tackles, 4 of which solo, 2 tackles for a loss, 4 quarterback hits, 70 PFF rating. Ant also mentioned the nose tackle Michael Pierce, 2 sacks, 9 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 2 quarterback hits, 68 per PFF. And then the linebackers, Eric Kendricks, 1 sack, 47 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, quarterback hit, and 60 PFF rating. And then Anthony Barr, not played yet this season, but we know how good he can be. And also that safety tandem too, Xavier Woods, 1 interception, 3 passes defended, and 21 tackles. And Harrison Smith, a pass defended, a sack, 31 tackles. Never mind Cam Dantzler quietly having a really good season before he got COVID earlier on this week. It was a really young defense last year. They got hit by injury, got forced to play their young secondary, and got exposed. But this is a defense absolutely stacked with names. Now, if they can sort out that run defense, this is going to be an elite defense. But that looks like that's the key to win, right? We already talked about running the ball really well. They're not good at defending it. We're good at running it. But if it comes to passing the ball, they're going to get pressure on us with those edges in Griffin and Hunter. They're going to get interior pressure from Pierce. And then when we do pass over the middle, trying to get it to Hawk if he plays or Amon-Ra, they've got Kendricks and Barr waiting there. Never mind the safeties on the back end, just in case we do manage to get a pass away. This is really tough.
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. I think the simple solution is you've got to bypass that defensive line. Now, I know that's easier said than done, but you have to nullify them and take them out the game because, as you said, there's so many names on there. I mean, I'm really concerned about Evan Brown coming up against Michael Pierce. That's just a complete and utter mismatch. You know, Michael Pierce is massive. He's a good nose tackle, and, you know, he's what Aleem's going to be in a few years, and you'll see just what an effect a great nose tackle has on a game. That's the one I'm really worried about. So you have to try and neutralize them. Griffin ain't the fastest anymore. You've got to, I think, attacking the edge is the way to go. Pierce is going to be stuck in the middle. Griffin's going to be on the edge, but he ain't going to be running after runners all the time. I think you've got to try and attack the edges with your running game, try and get some routes open for them to go. And as you said there, the thing you can't do is fall into third and long against these guys. You have to keep making positive yardage. Put yourself in third and short situations so that it's easier to convert. Because if you get third and long, you're in a lot of trouble. And the one thing we can't afford is for our defense to be on the field all the time, because we've got enough injuries there already. We've got to keep them fresh. It's absolutely critical. You've got to get to the edge, and you've just got to, Dan Campbell says about putting players on who are mismatches. You've got to use TJ correctly. Put Swift in there, put Williams in there, get some mismatches going, target the linebackers. You know, if you're targeting the linebackers and they're in a situation where they need help, that's when you start affecting the corners, when you start affecting the safeties. Like you've seen with us, our game is affected because our young corners need protection from the safeties. Our linebackers need protection from the safeties. And so it creates weaknesses in our defense because we're having to allocate resources more than we need to certain areas of the defense. And that's what you've got to do with them. You've got to create these mismatches up. So they've got to start double teaming players. So they've got to start. And then you start exploiting the weaknesses. You find the cracks in there. So we've got the speed guys to do it. Raymond burned the Bears for his touchdown last weekend. I don't know what went wrong there, but you know, it's just all part of the mismatches, and you've got to find it. And hopefully Campbell and co are looking, because see, the Bengals offense had good success against it. Now, yes, I know their receivers are better. You know, they've got a good quarterback there in Joe Burrow, but the offensive line isn't the greatest. Neither was the Seahawks, but they found a way to get the ball down the field on them. They ran it and they found a way to be successful. So you can overcome the limitations of your wide receivers if you run it well, because then we only need to use them as and when. So, yeah, it's just, I don't need to go on like a broken record, but you've just got to get the run going.
Yeah.
I think the best way to do that is attack the edge.
Yeah, that's fair. So how do you see our offensive line stacking up then if there's no Sewell? You said let Nelson to left tackle, and just bear with me while I pop away and you speak on this for a minute, if that's okay?
Yeah, sure. I think Nelson has to go left tackle. I don't really see at this point anyone else who can play there. I know Nelson played there in lieu of Taylor Decker last year for parts. And he's been the backup as a left tackle predominantly for the most part. So you've got to put him there. Move Vitae out to right tackle. I think, you know, we have a tackle shortage. I know we've got guys on the practice squad, but Halabulavati, he is match ready at the minute. He can play at tackle. And then you've got to bring in someone for your right guard. I mean, Logan Stenberg did well in preseason, and yes, it is just preseason, but he's showing notable improvements in his game. So give him the opportunity. The one thing that Logan Stenberg excels in is run blocking. You know, he's a really strong, tough, physical guy. He can take on interior defensive linemen. He can get to the second level. He can create rushing lanes. So I think he's absolutely the perfect candidate to play at guard in this game. I don't think really there's anyone else I'd put in for consideration there, but that is just me personally. There are other guys there who could do that. But I think, yeah, you're going Nelson at left tackle. You're going Jackson at left guard. And just on him very quickly, I was really, really pleased with him last weekend. He had a bit of a rough start to the season. He's given up a lot of pressures on games. I think he was up to about 17, 18 pressures given away very quickly, Jackson was, but he gave away nothing last weekend, which is huge, especially with the injuries in there. We need him to be at his stout best. And then you've got Brown, and then you've got Stenberg at right guard, then you've got Vitae at right tackle. I think that's the only way we can go this weekend. I was just saying, Matt, Stenberg's biggest asset in his game is run blocking. He's an absolute, you know, he's a physical, tough warrior who can, you know, grapple with the best defensive lineman out there, get to the second level, create rushing lanes. That's what he does. And considering that's their weakness this weekend, he's the reason I've moved Vitae out, is to incorporate him.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think Stenberg has to come in. If we need to win the game by running the ball, Stenberg has to start. I slightly disagree with who I'd move where. I'd keep Nelson at right because I believe he starts to play well there, and I don't want to screw with Nelson. If you're going to move someone, move as few people as you can. And that, for me, means moving Halabulavati Vita out to left tackle, where Vitae has had some success historically with the Eagles. Vitae has proven to... Yeah, he's proven to be fine there. He played all across the line at the Eagles in all four non-center spots, and he did fine there. He came over with the potential to play the tackle slot. Now, obviously, we wanted to play on the right, but he was the swing tackle in Philadelphia. So he can do that. You only then have to move one guy.
You know what? This may be controversial, but seeing what I have of Nelson in my time as a Lions fan and what he's done here, I think his best work's come on the left. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that. He was manhandled by Chicago on Sunday. So many times they just got round the edge of him. You know, they bullied him off the ball. It was terrible to watch. But I remember him playing left tackle in games, and I've not seen anywhere near as many mistakes from him. I know it is the harder position, but as we've seen with Sewell, with muscle memory, all that stuff, etc., training. For me, I generally think that's where Nelson could go. And Vitae is more accomplished at right tackle on that right-hand side. He's been playing right guard for a while. So again, muscle memory, the way you play, it's easier for him to adjust there. And you're putting in a guard who is a good run blocker, which is what we need here. I think you just have to throw Nelson out there and hope he does well. And I was just saying also while you're away, Jonah Jackson, it was so welcoming to see him do well this past weekend. He didn't give up a single pressure. He's had a horrible start to the season, and he's not been anywhere near as good as he was last year. I think he's somewhere over 20 pressures given away so far, which is a lot, and he's given away a few sacks as well, and that was disturbing. But obviously, without Taylor Decker there, you can understand why. He's playing with a rookie tackle out there in Sewell, but he's going to be critical there. If you are going to put Nelson in, you've got Rick Guard, he has to stand up and play well, and he did. So that's a big positive there.
Yes, so per PFF, he's given up 16 pressures so far this season, but only two in the last two games. Well, two in week three and none in week four, so massive improvement. His pass blocking was an 85 grade against Chicago, which is crazy. He's already, apparently, per PFF, playing better than last year through a quarter of the snaps. So we'll see what happens with that. Dan has got a good point on Twitch. He says, Jonah Jackson has worked with multiple left tackles. I think that helps versatility-wise for who's there on his left, whoever that is, which is a great point.
Well, he played right guard one game last year, then he played all the others at left guard. And, you know, it helps when you're surrounded by a top two centre and a top five tackle. It helps your development. But I think it has been a rough start to the season for him. But I think this is all character building. As you say, the first 2 weeks it was bad, but he's really stood up these last 2 weeks and done really well. So, you know, he's critical there. So I'm really glad to see he has done the way he has. And, you know, if Nelson is going to have some success out there, he will need help. So you're going to have to put a tight end out there with him. I know TJ didn't do the best at the weekend. I saw him get blown up on a few plays, missing tackles, missing blocks. But you just have to go that way again and hope you get a bit more success. But
I mean, you just got to trust TJ. You haven't got any choice. Of course, if TJ plays badly, you're going to play badly. So
of course, but if we're changing around, I'm 100% putting Logan in there for his run blocking ability. 100%. I think that absolutely needs to be done, and I'm hoping he gets his chance now because his injury's there. He's the potential to be a really good player. So let's put our talent, let's not put in these journeymen on the practice squad. Let's get one of our own, put him in there, give him the opportunity to shine, see how he does. And that's what I'd be doing. So, yeah, as I say, Nelson, Jackson, Brown, Stenberg, Vitae. That's how I go if Sewell's not good to go.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I've said about it. I kind of haven't wavered from that. I'd go for Vitae on the left, Jackson, Brown, Stenberg, and Nelson on the right, because I just don't want to screw with Nelson and Nelson on that right-hand side. I think he's played better. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Just want to give a brief shout-out to all of the guys who are, again, watching live. Dan Pask on Twitch, One Funky Lions Ham, One Pride 40, Mike Hodges, a couple of other guys in there too. But just a brief shout-out to Cap Ice Cold. He says, my first time here, just wanted to say this is awesome. Keep up. Thank you, man. We appreciate that very much. Let's just have a few keys to win. I feel like we've covered it already. But the Lions are going to win this game. Why? And you said there's almost no chance of it. But let's take the thin slice of the wedge. If the Lions win, what happens?
Well, I think we've pretty much gone through it. For the Lions to win, this offensive line has to be able to work in run protection. It has to let the run game have an opportunity to breathe and impose their will on this team, because they're not good at defending the run. So the offensive line come out, they give Williams and Swift and Jefferson the opportunity to have an impact on this game and allow us to put up points. If we can do that, then we reduce the amount of pressure coming on Goff, and we're able to work, you know, with a plethora of guys. We've seen this offense can work. What the trouble is we don't see it working when the run game's not with it. We need to mix it up. So offensively, that's the key to it. Defensively, we have to be a lot better than last week. We have to get a lot more pressure on the quarterback. I think we've got to be prepared to throw more men at the quarterback this week, because the inside, you know, the IDL was just left last week to fend for itself, and it can't do that. You can't just allow them all to get double teamed and not get any pressure on the quarterbacks. As we've seen, if these are only even one or two receivers upfield against three or four of our guys, they can still win. So just all out aggression. And I know I've said this the last couple of weeks again, but it's more important than ever now. We saw what happened when we didn't put pressure on Fields last week. He just dissected us. Teams figured out what we were doing. The Ravens, they didn't put as many men in there, and we got four sacks on Lamar. Not many teams, you know, they gave up 19 all last season, and we got four in a game. The Bears saw that, and they adjusted to it. So we need to adjust for the fact that the box is going to be filled more this week. So we need to be prepared to throw more resources in there. And we need to play Aleem McNeil more. He got 21 snaps. And I know people say a nose tackle should not get more than a certain amount of snaps per game, but we're moving to a four-man front really quick on some drives. Even on first down, we're playing a four-man front. McNeil has shown, and I've shown it in my analysis of him, he's more than just a nose tackle. He has the ability to pass rush. But not only that, he has the ability, he will take double teams on. He will allow opportunities for other people on that line to get through because of the amount of attention he elicits. People naturally go after him because he's a big guy, but he can deal with those double teams tackles and he can still get pressure on there. So I want to see him in there a lot more. Hopefully, if Levi's fit, I want to see him in there a lot more. If Barnes is fit, I don't know what the situation with his shoulder is. He took a massive hit on one of the touchdowns last week, which hurt his shoulder. But I want to see him in there more. Because one of the things we struggled against with the Bears, like I say, because they had that many men in the box, they were able to do their double teams off the line of scrimmage, and the spare guys were able to get to the second level and block our guys coming through. And one of the big reasons for that is lack of speed. You're not forcing them to. Anzalone ain't quick. Reeves Maybin isn't the quickest in the world. If you've got a guy who's steaming through like a bullet train, the guys can't finish their tackles off on the defensive linemen. So they're in a situation there where they have to give a little, and you're putting them under pressure and you're going to make them break. So I want to see Barnes in there a lot more, because he will do that. You know, if there's a gap there to be exploited, he will get through it before the offensive linemen are able to get to the second assignment. So that's the key defensively if we're going to win. Send the house but just be justified in the way you do it.
I'm just going to give a shout out to a guy who hasn't had much talked about for him this season, because a certain someone was drafted to take his spot. But someone who I've noticed pop up in the last few weeks has actually been John Pennacini. I think he's continued his good form from last year, and God knows the problems he had with those shoulders last year. But the number of times we've actually come in with Pennacini and with McNeil side by side when we're really trying to stop the run, I feel like he's been really, really good. So I wouldn't mind seeing Pennacini and McNeil on the field with McNeil as effectively a pass rusher. Like, I would really like to see that. That would be quite cool. My keys to win are pretty much exactly the same as yours. Run the ball hard. Be more elaborate with some of your run plays as well. One of the things the Bears did well is bring in six guys and then have a zone running the scheme that absolutely took away two or three guys with one man and opened massive gaps for the other three guys. Like, there's no reason why we can't do that. You know, you have a look at what happens there, and you saw guys in motion. The left tackle would motion to right tackle, and then you have two tackles on the right-hand side, and then suddenly there'd be a man in motion jet sweeping behind those two tackles on the right-hand side. Like, it's not rocket science, this sort of thing. Just be, have a bit of misdirection and keep running the ball. You get 14 points down, keep running the ball, because it's what gives you success. It keeps your defence off the field, which is one of the places where we're weak. If you're 14 points down and you score a touchdown slowly running the ball, your defence is fresh and you're only 7 points down. Like, if you score a touchdown quickly, your defence is tired and they have the ball 7 points ahead, ready to gash your defence again. Like, you've got to play both sides of the ball. Running the ball is not a weakness even when you're behind. Unless you're so far behind, you've got to score quickly more than you worry about your defence, and you just on a prayer at that point.
Exactly, and that's my point. I think every game so far, even the preseason, we've been double digits down at some stage first, you know, and we're always having to dig ourselves out of a hole. So, you know, there needs to become a point where we need to stop this from happening. We need to be able to stick to our original game plan, because our original game plan has shown it can work. If it hasn't worked, Aylin has adapted it and has shown that it can work after that. He's able to sort out any of the problems that we have. So, you know, I would just like to see one week where we come out and we are able to stick with them. Go in at the half, even if it's just a score down, but that's close enough, because so many weeks we're going in multiple scores down and we're just leaving ourselves too much to do. That San Francisco game, just a bit too much to do. The Ravens game, just a tiny bit too much to do. You know, even if you only score 3 points in that first half against the Ravens, we win that because they can't go for a field goal. It's little things like that. And I just hope that, because I know everything's put against us this weekend, but I so badly just want a win, or I so badly just want a performance where we can say, look, we didn't shoot ourselves in the foot. We lost because the other team was genuinely better than us. And I feel like in a lot of the games so far, we've lost, you know, because of us, not in spite of, if you get what I mean.
I do.
And yeah, we've got the personnel to do it. Even with this banged up offensive line, I still think offensively we've got the personnel to do this. Just having guys like Raymond and St. Brown and having dual threat running backs just gives you so much versatility in your game. And, you know, if they come into this game cocky, which is by all accounts what they are, if their fans are any indication of it, they've already chalked this off as a win. So let's just be prepared to, as Dan Campbell says, you know, bite a kneecap and let them know that we are there. And that this isn't going to be the cakewalk they think. And as I say, the one thing that everyone's overlooked is they're under an immense amount of pressure. They can't afford to be in a fight against us, because if they seem to be struggling against a Lions team devoid of most of its talent, then, you know, it's an indictment on them. They're not as close to being a contender as they think they are. They're, you know, If they lose to us, they're out the playoffs. That's it. They're done. And I don't think they're going to get back to it from there.
No. So, no. Everything on the line.
Exactly. There is a situation where everything is on the line for them, and it can do funny things to you. And that Minnesota team are known for choking.
Yeah, they really are. It's just been posted in our Discord by Ash, and thanks to Ash, the Lions practice for today, and Hockenson has been upgraded to limited practice for today. Everyone else who was limited is still limited, but Sewell was held out of today as well, so definitely trending towards not playing on Sunday, unfortunately. But there we go. Anything else you want to add on this game, my man?
I think obviously we've been over the keys to it, and I think I'm just really hoping for a good performance here. I don't care if we get battered in the end. I just want to see us make a game of it, because me and you and all the Lions fans, we can see the progress that's been made here. We can. It may not be the most, you know, obvious in the world, but even just behind the scenes, just change of mentality, of attitude, it's getting to where it needs to be. It's just getting a little closer every time. And I just want our divisional rivals to know that as well, because we're just looked down upon with scorn at the minute. And the Bears, they're laughing because of last weekend. I don't want to give the Vikings the same opportunity to do so. So I'm just hoping that we come out and we just give everything we've got. And if we go down, let's go down swinging.
Completely agree. If we're going to lose and everyone expects us to lose, let's go down swinging. Because you know what? When you attack in that way, it brings luck more into chance than skill. And if we can get lucky, I don't give a shit. I want one win on the board. And if we get one win, I can go through the rest of the season and be like, well, at least it's not 0-70. So
I will be absolutely insufferable to Vikings fans if we win.
You're already insufferable to Vikings fans, but fair play.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Right. Our next episode is on Monday, 11th of October. That will be the Lions at Vikings review show. Don't forget, tomorrow we're probably going to be recording our Royal Lions College Football Podcast Week 5 in review. And just looking across the college scores, there were some really big games last week. I know that you said it was a stacked slate, but I didn't really quite realise quite how much. Obviously, Georgia-Arkansas was a big blowout. Cincinnati did the business against the frauds of Notre Dame. And there was a really big result for Oregon as well.
It's huge. The amount we're having to do for this week's show, I mean, we're looking at cornerbacks already for this week. I mean, Ferg's putting a request for us, which we're looking at as well. And trying to go through all these games, I think 8 of the Power 25 lost, which is unheard of. Not that many teams lose, especially against, you know, a lot of them were against unranked sides as well. I've seen a lot of chat in our chat today about draft picks and that it's going to start getting very interesting soon. I mean, one of the presumptive top 5 picks this year, Derek Stingley's just been put out for the year. So what that's going to do to him, what that's going to do to the draft order remains to be seen, but there is an awful lot to go out there in the minute. And I can already see in the chat, there's a lot of varied opinion about who we should be looking to take in the first round this year. I've seen Kayvon mentioned. I've seen Hamilton mentioned. There's an absolute plethora of people that we could possibly pick in the first round this year. I'd hate to be the person trying to call it, but I'm gonna be, because we do the college podcast. So it's interesting. But I don't know. Again, if anyone has any questions about it, just lay them on us, and we'll. Hell, if anyone's got any questions now before we go off air, just drop them in the chat and we'll answer them. We may as well while we're here.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think we're going to be running a watch party on this Sunday, because I'm going to be at the game at Spurs Stadium, and I'll be on my way back during the Lions game. I'm going to try and catch it live and then maybe jump into a review show with guys that do run like kind of instant reaction pods, because I know there's a few of those. But there's no strict kind of watch party. But if you want to discuss with us game as you go, don't forget to jump on that Discord. DM us. Our DM's open on Twitter. DM us for a link, or I might tweet one out on There the Game. We're obviously going to post our predictions probably Sunday morning UK time. And don't forget to interact with Ant on the live chat, because his tweeting is relentless all the way through a game day. And the reactions we've had all the way through have been absolutely fantastic, Ant.
Oh, God, yeah. I've got so many people who come on every week now and start chatting, just trying to keep up with it. Trying to watch the games a hassle, but I love it. It's great to see. And I mean, especially this season, I think, you know, coming together, just discussing everything, seeing what's good, seeing what's not, it's healthy, because a lot of the games, you know, we're maybe not going to win too many. So let's come together and look at the positives. Let's see what's going on. And yeah, just the feedback's been insane. We've got so many more people following us now. Again, we can't thank you enough for that. You know, it's good that you choose to spend your time with us in little old England across the ocean, because there are a lot of other alternatives you could have there over in the US. So yeah, come join us during game time. It's good fun. We enjoy having you there, and it's just good to do. We need a bit of a laugh sometimes during the games.
Definitely we do. Jimbo G just says, hello everyone, I'm late. Yes, you are, sir. You've missed the entire show. But I did say to him, any questions before we go? And he says, salute. Who will win this game and why? And we've not actually picked the game. I know that we're probably going to do some predictions on game day. But Ant, why don't you take this?
Why me first?
Because I'm the host.
Well, Okay, I'm the positive guy amongst us all. I'm the one who's always looking for the positive results. And it killed me to say we were going to lose by 10 to the Bears, even though for the first week, I think since we started doing these last year, I won. You know, I think that's the first time I've ever won a prediction week before. And I feel bad because it was for a defeat. But I like to think positively. And I know we're in Minnesota. I know we have a shed load of injuries and all this, but I can see a route to victory. I try always every week to see a route to victory. If everything goes our way, and literally everything, all the luck, all the calls go our way, we could sneak one, given the amount of pressure they're under. And I think they're completely and utterly overestimating us this week. So,
do you mean underestimating?
Underestimating. Sorry, I'm trying to think this through, and I'm trying to think how I can justify
You're trying to
Alliance
think, okay,
win.
May I throw another spanner in the works? Which
I'm
I know
trying
that
to think
already...
how I can. I'm trying can to think it... how I can justify Alliance win.
Can I completely destroy you in one comment, two words?
Go on. Go
Cleet
on.
Blakeman.
Oh shit! Yeah, I forgot about. Oh, sorry, my language. yeah, Cleet Blakeman. God damn it. Alliance win by two if everything goes well.
You said after the Bears game you weren't going to predict another Lions win for the entire season, did you not?
No, I said I wasn't going to think we could win another Lions game all year. I didn't say I wouldn't predict. I didn't say I think. I just we're five games into a 17 game season. I don't just want to go every week, we're going to lose, we're going to lose, we're going to lose, we're going to lose. I am a positive guy. And I always, on every show that I'm able to make it on, I say, is there a route to us winning this game? If there isn't, if it's just flat out we're going to lose, then I will say so. But there is a possibility there, however small or minute it might be. But I just like to think that we are due a bit of luck after that Ravens travesty. You know, after, you know, just everything has gone against us this year. Nothing has gone for us at all. And I just feel at some stage on one weekend, it has to go right. And we always see the shock results. The Jets put away the Titans last week.
It could happen.
And on 9 of 10 other weekends, that doesn't happen if it all gets together at the right stage. I think versatility-wise, with our offensive weapons, I've already said we've got guys to be able to do something a little different to make the Vikings think a little bit more when they're trying to get at us. I say by two us, but that's if everything goes right. But that's just the kind of guy I am. I don't like to be negative. I'm trying to enjoy this season as and when I can. And then I will do my looking forward to the draft season when it's all over. But until then, I don't want to think about that. So just let a man have his moment. You're the host. You put me first.
Yeah, yeah. No complaints, man. I love a positive guy. You know I do, because God knows some of the other guys are more realistic, and we need balance. There's another question coming, and I'll put that after my take on this. But for the first time, I think I'm going to go properly negative on this game. I think I've predicted the Lions to be 2-2 so far. So no one can say to me that I haven't been on the positive side of things, given how it's gone so far. But in this game, I see an overpowered Vikings offense against a banged-up Lions defense, and I see a Lions offense determined to choke versus a Vikings defense who, if anything, are underperforming so far and have massive big-name players and people returning from injury. So I see a route to victory like Ant. I do think it's possible. I'm not saying it's impossible. What I am saying is it's not fucking likely. I think that on average, Vikings win by 25. I think
25.
I think that this game ends up being something like 38-13. I don't know.
I don't know him. I don't know him.
Okay, can you tell me that considering that they scored 30 on Seattle, 33 on Arizona, that this
Seattle
time...
had one of the worst defenses last year. Arizona's wasn't much better. I know it's better this year, but again,
yeah,
I'm chugging Kool-Aid.
I know, but Seattle's defense historically has been good, and they've got a really good defensive head coach. So even if they had a down year last year, that's not going to be consistent. I mean, I know that we don't fully buy into the PFF thing, but I do think their general trend of offense is quite consistent and defense is more year to year does hold true. So last year, don't care when it comes to defense, really.
Yeah, I get you. So plus 25.
Yeah, well, the thing is, if you said to me that Mattison gets a running touchdown, Cook gets a rushing touchdown if he plays, or Mattison for two, and then Jefferson gets a touchdown and Thielen gets a touchdown, that's 28, and that doesn't sound unrealistic. So
I know. I'm just,
what are you
again,
gonna do?
The power of positivity. In fact, someone on Twitter said something very, very good to us earlier. She gave me a hashtag. It's winning min, as in winning Minnesota.
Winning min.
That is our winning like min. That is our hashtag, and I like it. So I'm running with that this weekend until we get blown out or whatever. Winning min will be trending.
Jimbo G says he's predicting a win for the Lions by two, but the worst case scenario is a 40-point loss.
Good lad. Oh, Jesus. Well, maybe he's just echoing our thoughts then. I'm echoing his positive side. You're echoing his negative/realistic side.
Yeah, I think absolutely right. There was another question that I saw, which was...
For all those wanting to draft Kyle Hamilton, by the way, I get you. He's an absolute freak of a player and would make our safety room entirely better. But if we're picking at number one or two and we can't trade back, you're still going to be ballsy enough to make that pick. Because that's the problem we've got. We couldn't shift the Okuda spot 2 years ago because we wanted to trade three and we couldn't. If we can't trade one this year, because Spencer Rattler is not all he's picked up to be at quarterback, Howell's doing well, but there's no outright number one at the minute if we end up picking number one or two. Even Kayvon. Kayvon's been injured. He's now serving a suspension for a targeting ejection. He's not playing as much as he should be, so the tape ain't going out there. There's a real conundrum in that top five this year. Stingley's now injured, and I don't want us to go anywhere near him anyhow. But if we're one or two, are you still going to be brave enough to pull the trigger on that Hamilton one if we can't trade back? That is the only issue. I know Ryan said he would, and I would agree that he's what we need, but that would be the only theoretical question I would ask to those. We might not be in a position to do so if we can't trade, because he ain't going to be there at the end of the first. I know that much.
I do think it's going to be easier to trade down from seven than it is from one, because I think that it's less top heavy, but there's a good amount of really good talent, just not a lot of elite blue chip talent. That's my reading so far on what's out there. I think if you're at one and two, you might be stuck there and forced to take
someone not perhaps
worth one or two in previous years.
I think so. There's a lot can change, but right now, it's going to be really difficult to trade out for Hamilton from there, in my view, unless the team is really, really desperate.
So if you want Hamilton, you need to win three or four games to kind of go down the order a bit so you can actually take him.
I think setting the record for a safety at four is feasible. I think four is fine because he is an absolute game changer. Absolute game changer. But I think above that, you have to start looking at value. And Jesus Christ, could you imagine what the Detroit Rags would do if we took a safety at one or two when there's a quarterback hanging there, even if he's not a good one?
The Detroit Rags are going to rag on it either way, so don't care. Mark Cunningham in our WhatsApp chat has just said, I just hope we win one soon, as my Bengals supporting mate is laughing at us, what the fuck. And following on from that, Mike Hodges has asked, which game will we win first? Where's our first win coming? I know you've just predicted a win for us, but I kind of think that's maybe like your hopeful side rather than your realistic side. If you're going to tap into your realistic side, where does our first win come of the season?
Eagles.
That was a very quick response.
Yeah. I don't get me wrong, I love Jalen Hurts, and I think what they're doing to him there is a travesty, and I think if they want to get rid of him this year, I absolutely trade for Jalen Hurts and bring him here. Because I think he can be that good behind on a good offensive line. I know that might send some ripples out there, but it solves our problem and we might not have to spend that much to get him. But the Eagles is where it's at. I think, you know, they're in a lot of bother at the minute. Sirianni is a worse head coach than Dan Campbell by a long shot, and I don't know why it doesn't get mentioned more. There's a lot weirder stuff going on there. He's not going to be a coach anywhere near as long as Dan Campbell is. I foresee that being the first one, but yep, that's not me ragging on Jalen Hurts.
No, I'm absolutely with you. I do not see a win against the Vikings. Anyone who thinks that the Bengals are going to be easy have not watched the Bengals this season. I don't mean that they're a really good team. What I mean is they're really good where we're weak.
They've just got a ton of offensive threats. They've got three really good receivers. They've got good running backs, decent tight ends. There's just too many weapons for our secondary to handle with them, I feel. And Joe Burrow's just really, really, really damn good.
Yeah.
So I'm the same. I think it's the Eagles before the Bengals for me.
So for me, I can see us going lose against the Vikings, lose against the Bengals, lose against the Rams, and then beat the Eagles, beat the Steelers, lose to the Browns, beat the Bears, lose to the Vikings. And then you're into the latter half of the year. Maybe we can nick one late. Away against the Falcons could be one I'd point at on Christmas or Boxing Day. And that'd be my four, maybe. But we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see. What else do we have? Jimbo G says he's a very positive person. Yes, sir, you are.
He is, and I like to think like him. I think if you're just going to predict losses every week, it just stops being fun. I think you get more fun out of seeing how you can win a game. Yeah. And, you know, if there's a possibility there to do so. So I'm with you, Jimbo. You know, let's rock the Kool-Aid. And hopefully, when that win comes, it's going to be absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
One Prime 40 says, do you see us running three safety sets in the future?
We've only got three safeties, so we've only got three safeties, haven't we? It depends how you deploy them.
Darryl Worden played there last week, I guess.
He's a cornerback, though, isn't he? We need him at corner. Well, he didn't grade very well, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because it was his first week and he'd only been bought up a few days before. So it depends what you're doing with him. Because where are you going to take the extra man from? You can't. I mean, if you're using them when you're using a 3-4 front, then maybe. But I mean, it helps to have that extra protection there. But the thing is, if you want to run three safety sets, you've got to be tight up front to be able to lend the extra man out there, don't you?
I mean, at the end of the day, quite often when you're playing three safeties, unless you're playing all three in coverage, one comes down in the box and becomes that linebacker anyway. So,
and I'd put Tracy Walker there straight away. I think he's the best one at rushing the quarterback, doing that little job which he can do. I mean, the speed. I mean, did you see the one just before the first touchdown, I think it was, where he sprinted after whoever it was, Montgomery out wide and took him down from behind? He was lightning quick.
Was
I think
great.
That's where you utilize him. So if you are going to use a three safety set, bring him down and let him do that work. So I think he'd do all right at it, to be fair.
One thing that I noticed from the PFF grades, by the way, Tracy Walker is the only defender we have this season who is positively graded in all four phases of play. That's tackling, run defense, pressure, and coverage.
His coverage has been great. I think it's 2 of 6. And he's not given up. Well, I know he's given a touchdown up, but still 2 of 6 is pretty good in the circumstances. Anzalone's 12 of 12. So it could be a lot worse. But it depends where it comes at. For me, I'm putting the extra men up on the defensive line because the Bears just nullified our threat last week. That's where we're at our strongest. And, you know, I'd put the extra guy in there, but I'd be using McNeil more. Maybe do you use your thing with Pennacini and put them both in there just as maulers to get through? Because they need, if you've got two guys on each of those, because they need them. So you put your big guys in there and take up all the attention. I think that's what you've got to do. Just too many times last week, we spread the formation out and they were able to just bat us away with ease. I think you just have to be a little more aggressive there, but keep McNeil in. Yeah. I mean, on the flip side, it was funny, in college last weekend, I saw a team, they use their nose tackles when they're in the red zone, offensively, you know, to rush in touchdowns. That was a great system. I can't remember who did it, but I'd like to copy that as well, just as a weird thing on the offside. They bring in their nose tackles to create running lanes on the offense. That'd be interesting to see, especially with big boy like Allen. But
yeah, it's true. And, I mean, he was a high school running back too, so it's not like he's a stranger to that side of the line. There's a question from Cap Ice Cold, one of our new viewers, and thanks for the question. He said, we won't get this game, but do you see the Vikings doing what the Ravens did and overlook us? And
oh, God, yeah.
So my answer is different. My answer is no. For the reasons that Ant gave about them being under pressure and needing this game to basically stay in the race, I think they're going to take this very seriously. And you know what? I think this Lions team has actually really shocked people about how competitive it is at such a disadvantage. So, no, I don't think they will, but, you know.
Yeah, I think they will. I know a fan base is different to a team's mentality, but, you know, they believe that they're a 3-1 team. They believe that they're that much better than they are. And I think they're going to look at us as an easy game. They're going to see the players we've got out and they're going to think it's going to be a lot easier. But at the flip side, we've got a lot of players who have a lot to prove out there. I absolutely think they're going to overestimate us. And I think if we can come out hot, that's one of the critical things. We've got to come out hot and put some pressure on them. The fans are going to turn on them real quick because they want the playoffs as a minimum this year. And any form of fight from us that they can't be seen to deal with, it's a massive threat to that. I don't believe in Zimmer. I think he's holding them back. And, you know, I don't think they're going to take us as seriously as they should do.
Yeah.
And I think the upset's there to be had. So I see them underestimating us completely.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I can see it going either way, but I just think Zimmer is not the sort of guy that tolerates that sort of thing. So we shall see on Sunday. Anyway, I might draw this to a close unless there's anything else you want to say, man. I haven't got any more questions.
No, that's fine. If we're all done, we're all done.
I've we're all done then.
The college one, so.
Yeah, socials. Roar the Lions UK, YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and the Facebook group is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide. If you are in the UK, not this weekend, but next weekend, on Sunday, following the game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, we will be having a meetup at a location to be decided, but I think it's going to be at the Hippodrome Casino at Leicester Square in London. We are going to have Lions fans meeting up in the UK, as far as I know, for the first time ever. Might have been one in the 80s, but, you know, I wasn't alive to see it, so I don't care. It didn't happen. This is the first modern era meetup at the Detroit Lions in the UK. Come and join us. Say hello to me. I'll definitely be there. I'm hoping Ryan's going to join me, but he might actually be on his way out to LA on the Monday, so might not be able to make it. But it'd be great to see you there. The event is on that Facebook group. So it's Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide. Go and join us there. Also on the web, we've got some articles coming up on roarthelionsuk.com. I'm currently writing a quarter season review. I'm hoping to drop that tomorrow. So go and read that when that drops. Look out for that on Twitter and Facebook. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast 5 stars. I actually need to just quickly check whether we've had any reviews on Apple Podcasts. So bear with me at the moment.
Yeah, I'd just say if you go to that meetup, you'll have the chance to meet some of the podcasters before we meet each other. So,
well, at least meet me at the very least.
We've never met one another. None of us on this podcast have ever met any of the others before. We've spent, 15 months now conversing via Zoom most weeks, and yet we've still never met. It's one of the intriguing things, isn't it?
It's absolutely mad, isn't it?
Do you reckon we're all going to hate one another when we eventually meet up?
Oh, we're all dickheads, really. I know it. I do know it. Right.
I can't wait till we go to Detroit.
It's going to be great. I mean, so I'm still planning to go.
I know. I can't wait to go. I want to meet all these people out there. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And if you could all let us know of the best places to go and eat and things like that, that would be great. Because there is so much food I want to try over there.
Yeah, I really can't wait to try it
before I go.
Also, drop in the chat which Coney Island dog you should have, because I know there's two types and I never know which one to have. I'm going to be out there in 6-7 weeks time for the Thanksgiving game, so I need to know which one to have, so drop that down there if you can. What up, Doe, to Super Cyan Lions. You're going to have to replay this episode, man, because we are on the way out. No new reviews on Apple Podcasts. If anyone can do that, you're going to get a shout out on the show. So really appreciate it. If you can do that, it'd be fantastic. But just remains for me to thank for this episode my co-host, Anthony Fitzpatrick. My name's Matthew Turner. Thank you so much for watching, for listening. We'll see you on Sunday for the game and Monday for the review podcast. College football coming up. But let's go, Lions. One pride.
One pride.